Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I am your interim host, Jeff Gamet, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And wow, we are closing in on the end of the week. And what a great way to dive in to pre-weekend eve. Would that be a good way to describe today?
Pre-weekend eve, okay.
Anyhow, so here we are on pre-weekend eve, and I get to hang out with all of these amazing people, and this is absolutely awesome. I am so happy to be here with all of you. Before we dive into everything else, I just want to let everyone know, Kyle, host of the Daily News Show, announced that he can't do it anymore. So that's wrapping up, and the Daily News Show will be sorely missed. Kyle, you're absolutely awesome, and I totally get it. You need to be focusing on other things, and that's okay. But yeah, we will miss the Daily News Show. It's been a wonderful resource, and Kyle has just been absolutely fantastic. The pinnacle of profession, and is someone we could, but at least I should probably strive to emulate. Kyle, you are awesome. So,
And thank you also everybody who has supported the news show so far.
Yes, absolutely appreciated. And so it's sad knowing that the show is ending. At the same time, I'm really happy that we had so many years of an amazing show with Kyle at the helm. Yeah. Hey,
one out for my homie.
That's right.
Here's an idea. Go to britishtechnetwork.com, click on the news show, go back 8 years, and start from the beginning.
There you go. Relive all the good times. Yeah. Speaking of good times, Tom, how are you?
I'm having a good time. Thanks, Jeff. I'm doing fine. I'm a little discombobulated today. Excuse me, I have, I think, 4 deliveries today coming.
Wow, nice. Think.
I'm getting ready for a trip, and I sort of panicked ordered. So I have a laptop, electrical conversion plugs, a passport carrier, and some new pants on order. So I am waiting for that.
What a combination. Sounds like a party.
Yeah, that sounds like a typical Amazon order to me.
Well, exactly. But it's a clear sign of panic buying. Oh, yeah, I need those. Oh, yeah, I need those. Oh, yeah, I need those. So if anything shows up, we can do some unboxing. Maybe the computer would be the most fun. But if my pants come, we can unbox those too.
I'm looking forward to the live modeling of the pants.
Yeah, okay. And Tob, we're discombobulated every day.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. Rich, I feel like there. It's been an eternity since I have seen you.
It has, you know. It has. It's been ages, hasn't it? Mainly
a whole
because,
year.
Yeah, I didn't know when we were coming back. And then I saw a tweet from Jeff saying, hey, the Big Show's starting. I'm like, oh, it was tonight. Okay. And I missed that one.
That was 2 weeks ago.
That was 2 weeks ago. Okay. I can't remember what happened last week. Was there a
Don't
show last week or was there no show? Okay.
There was a show, but we pushed around the time and I think you missed it because
of that. Oh, that was it. That was it. Yeah. I missed it. Yeah. But you've got me today. There you go.
Which is awesome.
Good you.
But yeah.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to see you all and to talk to someone. I've been on my own here all day. It's been boring. And it's my birthday and I'm just
How did I not know this?
How did I not know that?
Well, I hadn't said, but you know, it's good to be here with people.
That's awesome.
I've made everybody really sad. I don't.
It's great.
Excited.
It's your birthday. Yeah.
Happy, happy birthday. It's Rich's birthday. Hope you're having cake and an awesome time.
I did. That's you free. Know, I went and bought cake.
Nice.
Awesome. There's no way I'm not doing that.
Because you know, Rich, you only turned 30 once, so you should
That's
really
true.
Celebrate.
That's true.
That's once
true. Yeah. 30. Are the filters working on this camera? Yeah, 30.
Rich, true story. I don't think I've ever sung the same birthday song twice.
Really?
I just make them up on the moment. So that was the one-off Rich special birthday song.
I appreciate that. Wow. That's really good.
He's going to send you an NFT for it too, Rich.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well, I'm missed glad you had a kick. Did I miss talking about Donald Trump's NFTs? Was I on the show for that? I can't remember. Never mind.
I tried to forget.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I don't think you were here for Cheeto NFT.
Okay. Never mind.
Yeah. Sorry you missed it. Patrice, how are you?
I'm doing good. One of those weeks, I mean, January, like the first 2 weeks of January, like the first 2 work weeks of January, I should say, feel like 6 months so mm-hmm. far. So I hope that changes. it's been an interesting week, a little bit of whiplash. Like you jump from like topic to topic and it's like one is here, one is there, one is like, it's all over the place. But no, I've had a good week. We talked in the, during the like pre-show about the Vienna meetup that I organized, the Vienna trip that I organized. A really lovely time. It was really good. I'm going to do it again in, I think, next week.
Awesome. I'm
going to go to the Chocolate Museum in Vienna. So.
Wow.
That's going to be interesting. Yeah. I mean, and then I'm also getting like very, very, very slowly ready to move in May. So like I have a couple months, so it's not urgent, but I'm like, okay, you can... Like whatever. Oh, we should probably fix that or like pack that up already. Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Cancel some stuff. Like I have to do that. All of that. So doing good, and I'm very happy. It's Thursday. I'm very happy. The weekend is coming, and I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah. See, pre-weekend Eve is nice.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
Though it would be better if it was a Mac show. That means the weekend would be already here.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Speaking of Mac show, another Mac cohort from back in the day. Ben, how are you?
What's up, Jeff? I'm a great man.
Awesome. And we'll use that as foreshadowing or a teaser. We'll use it as a teaser. There's going to be plenty to talk about on the Mac show tomorrow.
Yep, oh yes.
For a change.
Did something happen this week at Apple?
Yeah, I believe out of spite, Apple made some announcements just to screw up our 2023 predictions.
They're all wrong now, right?
Yeah, a bit late. We had some of that on the 2022 predictions. So.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I think Apple had them in their 2022 predictions as well.
I think so, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's talk about that tomorrow.
And we'll be talking about that. Mm-hmm. All right. So with that, how about some news? Who has the first story?
I will start with the bad news.
All right, I'm sitting down.
Yep.
I'm standing.
Well, the good news is we all have jobs because we do not work for Microsoft.
That's lucky.
For now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There are many inaccuracies with that statement, but I'll roll with it for now.
Yeah, I have to work on Windows almost every day.
But throughout the end of all of the country, there were 10,000 layoffs hitting, well, everywhere. You know, big layoffs in gaming, hardware, everything you can think of, to the point where Microsoft is going to be changing up their hardware portfolio.
Or so they say.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, considering Microsoft is basically single-handedly pushing PC design forward at this point, that could be interesting.
Or not. Could also just be that the interesting things they were doing, they're not doing anymore.
Or yeah. that they just hired too many people. I think, I can't remember the numbers, but I think they, last year, they hired some huge number of people. So they, this represents like 5% of their workforce, which is a pretty big layoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In terms of percentage.
I mean, the percentages don't tell the real story, because 5% for Microsoft is still 10,000 people.
Right.
And that is 10,000 people whose lives just got a little bit more or a lot more complicated.
Right.
And I mean, this has nothing to do with hiring. I mean, this has very little to do, at least, with hiring more people. It has a lot to do with management working through Excel sheets and predicting that there might be a little bit tougher times, and just saying, well, we want to keep our margins, we want to keep our bonuses, so let's just fire some people. Because otherwise, if it was really about certain products that had maybe too many people, or certain products that they're not doing anymore, that would look very different. And this is not Microsoft. This is all of them. Like Amazon is doing the same thing. Like they're taking a big Excel sheet and saying, okay, we're just going to cut out random 5%, more or less.
Right, because they didn't say they were shutting down a particular division or anything.
Exactly.
It's a financial thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's the typical end of the year or end of the financial year thing as well, where they fire some people to make their numbers look good. Like, it's the same crap that happens. And I really feel like, I've been thinking about it, I really feel for the people who got fired.
It's terrible.
Like, how about we didn't hire the people in the first place? So like, if there were too many, how about thinking about that before? There are other ways of reducing that. Simply not, there's always churn, and simply by not rehiring or refilling those positions, you would not, in a normal way, just reduce the workforce.
Yeah, you probably get 2-4% churn anyway.
Yeah, depending on the department, even more.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, I know some companies that had 30% churn in a year. So.
Yeah.
Wow. Patrice, I'm glad you went right to the part a lot of people aren't saying out loud.
Mm.
And when I heard this news, my first thought was, I am so glad Christina Warren moved over to GitHub. Mm-hmm. Then my second thought was, why are all these companies still treating people like an entry on a spreadsheet?
Well, yeah. I mean, I will say this. I asked Christina right away, because GitHub is still technically a wholly owned subsidiary of Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And thus would technically still appear in the balance sheet.
True.
Yeah, but GitHub is being run as if it were an independent company.
Yeah. But they rolled up the financials at the corporate level. So if they're trying to reduce expenses, I mean, who knows how they allocated that 5%. But Ben said, financially, they have to report GitHub's financials with Microsoft.
Mm. Yeah, but that's the thing. It's not about financials. It's about what they think might happen in the future, and how they want to make sure that they look good.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
I mean, surely the saddest bit, though, is the loss of the Surface Duo 3. I mean, those people are going to get other jobs, but they're lost to society and the human experience as a whole that we're losing through no Surface Duo 3.
I mean, just think of all the tens of people who bought the Surface, the Duo 2.
Oh, they'll just be found in drawers in like 5 years. Why do you remember they made this?
Oh, I had one.
Yeah, this was like the Kin.
Yeah.
Kin.
I mean,
there'll be YouTube videos in 5 years of what's that Microsoft phone nobody remembers, and it will be about the Surface Duo. They're coming.
There is one thing that you see, or that you've seen in like a lot of tech companies in the last couple of years, though, and that is, I mean, there was a hiring frenzy. They would, especially in the pandemic, they would hire like crazy. like expecting that they would need all, like a lot of people and would have a hard time finding them and so on, which is also stupid. Like, sorry, this is also like, I mean, this is a homegrown issue.
Absolutely. They hired too many people, right? Yeah. I mean, but that's also part of the, you know, the whole thing about being a public company and having to report quarterly results, and, you know, borrowing money was essentially free for 3-4 years. It's all those things put together, but at the end of the day, it's poor management.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
You know, I've been through 5% layoffs at, you know, fairly big companies, and it's always a financial thing. It's always, you know, yeah, if we spent a lot more time, we could probably figure out ways of being more surgical. But it, at the top level, it's just not worth it to spend the time and effort to do it correctly. Even managing over time, they don't think about it. And then all of a sudden they say, oh, we got to reduce expenses. Let's chop 5%.
It's typical short-term thinking.
Absolutely. And Microsoft has enough money in the bank. They could pay those people. And to... To Microsoft's credit, the one thing they seem to be doing that a lot of companies don't do is treating the people getting fired fairly well. Sounds like they're going to stay until March.
Taking the job away.
Yeah, but you could do it in a way where you give them, you know, the typical 1 month severance and 6 months of healthcare. They seem to be doing a little bit more. You know, they could do a lot more, but at least they're not doing the minimum. Most companies
the
minimum.
You could do the Elon Musk thing and promise something and then
don't even pay him.
This round of layoffs, on one hand, it surprises me because, you know, it's Microsoft, but on the other hand, it doesn't surprise me because we're seeing this across the tech sector.
Yeah, it's super popular to do right now. For some reason, everybody's doing it. Everybody's like, ooh, like small company, big company, doesn't matter. Like, they're all doing it.
Yeah. When I was like really seriously job hunting, I had several jobs where it got right down to the final details. Like, what will your start date be? What's your shipping address? So we can send you a company laptop and all of that. And then it just would suddenly stop. It's like someone decided we're not hiring, and that happened. It happened several times. And finally, I was like, okay, well, I'm not hiring me. I'm freelanceable, and so that's been working. And some of those companies that at the last minute pulled out of the job offer, they're now in the position where they're doing layoffs. And so my job would have been short-term anyhow. So the short version, I'm actually really glad that I didn't get back into the corporate space. I think I have much more security for income on my own at this point.
Yeah, it works out that way.
If the right offer came along, sure, I would end up taking it.
I mean, as Brett Terpstra, there are also definitely also some advantages to working in a corporate environment.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, if the right offer came along, sure, I would go for it.
So what you're saying is Microsoft, now that you have space, like, there's someone to hire.
Yeah.
Which, that's the funny thing. Like they said, they're going to hire people. So like they're like firing people on one side and then hiring again. Which, like, okay.
Yeah, and even some of the people that are on the cut list, you know, they've given them time to apply for jobs internally.
Yeah, that's quite normal. I mean, if a company can somehow keep people around, that's usually better because.
It costs a lot less to retain an employee than to hire one.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. And if there's a position somewhere that fits.
Yep.
Think I'm just waiting for a CEO position or whatever before I get into the corporate.
Oh, that totally makes sense.
Just
that
I've
totally
got my eyes sense. On when Tim Cook might retire. I think that'd be
that's
a good
an
one.
Idea.
I could just yep. slip right.
You have
into
the right it. Name for it. So.
Do they have like
nice short? Like sounds good. Richard yeah. Mm-hmm. Smith.
Yeah. I could do keynotes. It'd be awesome.
It'd be fantastic.
So like, Cousin Eddie, you're holding out for management.
That's exactly like that.
I am so glad, Ben, that you went there because I was just sitting here waiting, and if no one made the reference, I would finally do it. But I wanted to give everyone else a chance first. And Ben, you took it, and thank you.
Because Cousin Eddie should be your model of how you look for jobs.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Merry with Christmas. Government issued plastic between your scalp and your brain. What's left of it?
Yeah.
Sounds like Severance.
Oh,
a little bit, yeah.
I'm so looking forward to season 2 coming.
Me too.
Yep. Yep. All right, who has the next story? Oh, Tom, you dropped a story in, and if I had bothered to look, I would have instead said, Tom, tell us about your story.
Is the link working?
I think
Ars Technica link.
It's a valid link, but...
Oh, it got split.
Yeah, somehow got split.
Oh, I see what happened.
So while you put it in again, I'll tell people about the chat. Let's do it this way.
There you go.
So, but since we're just talking about it, we're putting all the like cool story links and cool thing links and all of that into our live chat. And if you want to listen or if you want to talk to us live, chat with us live, which you can do every Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time for the big show, and Fridays, 4 p.m. UK time for the Mac show, you can head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com, and yeah, you can talk to us and see everything live in color and everything. But if you are listening to this after the fact in like your favorite podcast player of choice, which is totally fine, that's what podcasts are for, you can head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And then you have to select today's date, so the recording date of this, not when you're listening to this, which is the 19th of January, 2023. And then you will also see everything that we've talked about, the links and everything else. That's not live.
Patrice. So
Tom fixed it.
Thanks.
Tom fixed it. Patrice, thank you for doing that. And now... we'll see if I'm capable of rolling with it. And when I finish talking about TSO hosts, just moving on, or will I reflexively ask you to talk about the chat?
I'm putting $5 on the ladder, Jeff.
I think that's a really good bet.
Okay. So the first lesson is make sure there are no character turns in your link. My story is about RISC-V. RISC-V is a CPU architecture which was originally developed at Berkeley some time ago, UC Berkeley. And you can think of it as an architecture in sort of the same idea as ARM. ARM is a CPU architecture. It has many flavors. There's a company called ARM that they own the IP for that, and they license it to people like Apple and Qualcomm and other people. ARM also does services where they can help you implement and so on. But the big business mm-hmm. is you just buy the license to use their core, and then you go off and design chips that use that core. And of course, ARM is used all over the place.
And isn't ARM also a RISC architecture?
It is. Yes. Yeah, it was mm-hmm. it was one of the first, you know, RISC from mm-hmm. the basics of ARM were designed in the mid 80s.
Yeah. And for the people who don't know what RISC stands for.
Oh, RISC is, there was sort of a transition. You can think of processors like x86 as CISC, which is Complex Instruction Set Computer, which means you have many, many instructions at the low level to do multiplication and all that kind of stuff. And that causes the design of the CPU to be quite complex because you have to support all these complex instructions that the software people do. RISC has a very a much smaller instruction set, and you build up more complex instructions hierarchically, but the hardware only executes very simple things. And the theory is, which I think is proven to be correct, is that if you have an optimized hardware design that does very simple instructions, and if you want to do something complex, you do that in software at higher levels, overall, you'll get better performance, power, area, all that kind of stuff. Mm. So over the last 3-4 years, you know, the markets tend to not like single dominant suppliers because it's very risky to the customers. You know, they're they're sort of held hostage by that supplier. And in addition, ARM has had some financial trouble recently. You know, they got bought by SoftBank a few years back. NVIDIA tried to buy them and that fell through. And frankly, their business isn't as good for several reasons. They've also had some less than friendly negotiations with a few companies, specifically Qualcomm. I think they have multiple lawsuits going back and forth about their licensing contracts and so on.
And Qualcomm is their second biggest licensee behind Apple.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So in that kind of a vacuum, the market really is primed to sort of cultivate a new supplier. And I would say RISC-V is starting to fill that role. And so the architecture has been around for a long time. It was spearheaded by a guy named David Patterson, who's a very famous professor in the semiconductor world. He's been around forever and has done a lot of really important things. There is a company called Sci-5, which is basically trying to be the arm of RISC-V. RISC-V is a standard. There's a consortium with members and so on. And Sci-5 is basically making a business of that, taking the architecture, making specific implementations, and essentially acting like ARM. They're licensing it to companies that want to design chips around that architecture. The big news, what the article points to, is at the RISC-V conference, a guy from Google, whose name, Lars Bergstrom, who's the director of engineering for Android, announced that Google wants the RISC-V architecture to be seen as a tier one Android platform. Mm. Tier one is like ARM. ARM is a tier one platform for Android. That means they're four doing builds and, you know, schedule wise, it's the first one down the pipe. That won't happen in the next week or two. It'll take some time for RISC-V to become a tier one platform and become a regular part of the Android build process. But the fact that the director of engineering of Android made that statement was taken to be kind of a seminal event for RISC-V. We'll see. But I think it's important. And I think, you know, what that means for a user is potentially there's going to be a new architecture out there. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. You want a phone that works. And if you're an Android person, you want an Android phone. But I think it is probably overall a good thing for consumers to have an alternative to ARM, and B, frankly, to have a backup for ARM in case ARM really does sort of implode, to be honest.
So is this Google saying that they don't have faith in ARM long term?
I think the people at Google are responding to their customers that are worried about ARM. And I think the customers that develop Android products are probably banging on their door saying, we need a backup to ARM, at minimum backup to ARM, if not a good viable alternative in the short term.
Could also that it's simply Google being like smart and on the business side and saying, hey, if there is someone in the market, we better support it.
Yes.
Like because otherwise it's not going to happen. Right.
But yeah, for example, you know, they could pick anybody. And I think for some time they've had x86 ports of Android, but nobody uses them. We all know about the problems of x86 and mobile. So x86 never really took off. I think the difference here is RISC-V looks like a reasonable alternative to ARM for mobile. And there are enough, you know, RISC-V and the Sci-5 company, they're not, you know, selling billions and billions of dollars worth of these processors yet, or the processor IP. but they're getting support from enough big names that I think it has a puncher's chance of actually making it.
I mean, especially since, for the most part, Intel has thrown their weight behind RISC-V.
Yeah, Intel is a member of the RISC-V consortium. You know, they failed to do a mobile processor. So, and mm-hmm. you have to remember now, Intel also does foundry business. They're trying to get into the foundry business, which is to produce chips for third parties. And some of the third parties that they're targeting, like Qualcomm, like Huawei and MediaTek and some others, are probably putting pressure on Intel to support RISC-V. The people at Intel that design microprocessors, the old traditional Intel business, are probably not advocating for RISC-V support. It's the foundry side.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But
that would be hilarious if, like, Intel came back basically through the back door, like with RISC-V.
They finally got a mobile processor that is actually competitive by licensing mm-hmm. a third party.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I have to say on ARM's end, picking a fight and threatening to pull the license of your largest vendor or your largest licensee was a giant miscalculation by ARM. And enough of the non-Apple mobile market is using ARM or Qualcomm processors, where this can't be seen as anything but a complete distrust of ARM.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reason that ARM is playing hardball with Qualcomm is because ARM is having financial trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And they know Qualcomm is their biggest customers. And they, if anything happens, which, you know, threatens the revenue they get from Qualcomm, you know, Snapdragons, that's a big problem for them. So I know, you know, we were just talking about layoffs at Microsoft, you know, ARM after the NVIDIA deal mm-hmm. fell through. They got rid of a bunch of people last year. And they're really not very financially healthy.
If I'm getting into that much trouble financially, wouldn't we expect someone like an Apple or a Google to buy them? Or Qualcomm, sorry.
If they can, yes. You know. If they're allowed to, yes.
Yeah,
I think that's the problem.
Yeah, the thing is, at this point, I think it's pretty clear no one partner is going to be able to buy ARM. It'll have to be a consortium of probably Apple, Microsoft, Google, and Qualcomm.
Right, and that's essentially what NVIDIA tried to do last year, and they talked to the governments and realized the governments across the world were not going to approve it for competitive reasons. Yeah. So I think it's a good question. I think Ben is probably right. It will have to be some sort of a consortium that would buy it.
Or a company like Nokia or someone.
Or
like
a company
someone
that's...
out of the left field somewhere.
Right. Yeah. Right. Which was kind of the SoftBank thing. You know, SoftBank bought them a few years ago. That was totally, you know, non-competitive, so it was okay.
But
hey,
I mean,
how
here's
about
the...
BTN?
Yes.
Well, it is a British
here's,
it,
here's
all
10
its roots
pounds.
Are in,
can we have it?
All the roots are in Cambridge, so it'd be perfect.
Yeah. Yep. Hey, ARM, right here on my desk I have 40 cents.
All right.
I think
so
if
we
put
have
everything
our down
together.
Payment. Now all we need is another $2 and we're set.
But, yeah. But I mean, I have to put my little tin hat on here. I mean, it's pretty clear what needs to be done to preserve ARM. The fact that it hasn't been done yet seems to me that companies are doing a lot of due diligence on RISC-V. Whether it would be better just to switch to that architecture, which isn't all that different from ARM, and porting over would be probably relatively a non-issue. You know, rather than going with that consortium to buy ARM.
And I mean, I think it's a good thing for the market anyway to not have. I mean, what do we have? We have ARM, which is basically there's very little in like alternatives to it on the mobile side.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Intel, like the old school Intel. There's not too much more around aside from that.
Yeah, you have Intel and AMD for the traditional x86. You know, thankfully, AMD has kind of come back over the last three or four years.
True, yeah.
So we have good competition there. But you're right. On the mobile side, it's ARM. And I mean, there are a couple others. You know, we have a few examples, but not very many.
So I think it would be a good thing also for ARM and for the market if not everything relied on them, like in general.
But also, this is going to be a thing that not one consumer notices, though.
No,
you know, people
not.
Are just going to get the next Android phone and it will have Android on it. And they'll be more caught up in which messaging app am I supposed to use, for God's sake. Just put 7 on there instead of 18. Why have you done that?
Yeah, where you might notice it is in like the advancements. Like how fast do we get? How much more efficient do we get? Like power efficiency, how small do we get? Like all of that enable. Like you might not notice that directly, but it enables other things. Like it might enable AR VR products that just need a certain level of sophistication to work properly on the chip.
Yeah, I think noticing how fast it is would be a great feature to bring to Android finally.
Okay. Oh, Rich, I've missed you.
Yeah, and I'll also put one other little conspiracy theory here when it comes to RISC-V. Apple hasn't gone to ARM9.
Right. I think there are a lot of people that are not happy with the sort of business terms that ARM is arguing about, like the Qualcomm case. I think technically, dictating. And I think, you know, there is some buzz among Qualcomm, Apple, and other ARM customers that the processor hasn't moved forward as fast as they wanted to. Now, I think for Apple, there's probably less concern, frankly, because they probably are way ahead of ARM anyway. I think it's the companies that depended more on the ARM R&D were the people like Qualcomm and Huawei and MediaTek. I think, to be honest, I think Apple was already ahead of ARM, has been for a while.
But they have done multiple processor transitions. So if they had to do another one, I mean, it's a little early for that, but they could.
They could just keep calling it Apple Silicon.
At this point, if Apple transitions to different processors, that's not the news. Because this is something that they've proven multiple times they can just do.
Well, I think, you know, remember, they're only licensing the rights to design ARM. They're doing all the work.
Right.
So if ARM goes bankrupt, it's not a problem because they can do whatever they want to do. If ARM gets purchased by somebody else, that purchaser has to honor those contracts. So I don't think Apple is going to be at risk in any way, shape, or form, at least in the short term.
Maybe. Yeah.
Long term. Maybe. Not in the next 2 years, though.
Yep. Awesome. All right. Next story. Oh, Rich, that's you.
I snuck a little one in there. So Stadia closed down, boohoo. We all very sad, devastating, and all of that. But the thing with it was a lot of us got these things, which is the Google Stadia controller. And, you know, they actually shifted a few thousand of these, you know, because lots of us got one optimistically to try it out and, you know, have a go and go, oh, yeah, this is rubbish, and put it down again. And the thing is, these only work with Google Stadia. Again, now gone. So this was just going to become a big pile of landfill. And over the last week, Google have released an update where you can free this controller from its Stadia shackles and turn it into a regular Bluetooth Xbox-style controller and use it with your PC or whatever. I've tested it with this one, and it works great. So it's just worth noting, if you've got a Stadia controller, there is a page on Google. There's lots of links. Google it. And there's just a little downloader thing. It takes you through 3 web pages, and you basically get a new controller that's actually usable and not awful, to be honest. I never had much of a problem with the controller other than it connected to Stadia.
I can see where that would be an issue.
And so being able to just use it like a controller now is great. Especially as my other usual one had broken and I needed to buy one. So they actually saved me $54.99. So I'm very happy about that. So if you've got one of these, go and do that with it.
Unlocking it was exactly the right move for Google.
The PR of not unlocking them, I think, would have been really bad after a while.
Yeah, I think the dumb decision was to lock it in the first place.
Well, I think there might have been a lot of optimism involved in that decision back in the day. But I think there was a lot of optimism involved in a lot of decisions they made back in the day. And I think they sort of didn't want to just give people like another Xbox controller or something like that. I'm not sure what is behind it technically, because it makes it very clear. Like, once you do this, this is broken as a Stadia controller, which is kind of meaningless at this point. But that, you know, there's something clearly about it that it's either one or the other. It's not both.
That's weird.
It probably installs some new firmware or something that doesn't work.
And I mean, it didn't connect through Bluetooth before. It had its own Wi-Fi connection. So that, you know, that's how they worked. The controller would connect to your Wi-Fi and have its own connection to the server. The idea that that's faster then. So I don't know why it had Bluetooth in it.
I was going to say, was the Bluetooth enabled before at all?
No.
So they basically just turned on the Bluetooth transceiver.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it must have had the antennas for it, right?
The hardware was there. Through software had it shut off. That's weird.
And there's Wi-Fi hardware in there as well. You know, this connected to my home network. Interesting. Not like, so it's having seen someone take a Dremel to one of these on YouTube, they are packed full of stuff. It's a heavy controller. There's a lot of things going on in here. And it's mostly radios. I wish they'd gone with like more motors and that kind of thing. They could, well, nothing would have made a difference, but whatever.
It wouldn't have saved Stadia.
It would not, would it? No. So yeah, whatever. But now free controllers for everybody. So
How long did Stadia last from start to finish?
Was it 3 years?
3 years.
Or something like that? Not much longer than that, if it was at all.
That I didn't think it was that long.
Might have been 2 years then. Let's have a look.
Yeah, only we had the tools to figure out how long Stadia lasted.
I know, right? November 2019.
Okay.
Is when it came out.
Well, three years plus. You're right. Well, at least you don't have to throw it away. That's a good thing.
That's it. I'm quite happy about that. So well done, Google, there, but not for the whole Stadia thing in general. That was stupid.
You know, it would have been a lot less expensive for Google just to sell Google branded game controllers that you use with anything.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what they did in the end.
Yeah.
It's true.
Well, I think they learned a lesson, and Amazon learned the same lesson, that there is clearly more to making great video games than just paying a lot of people and putting them in the same office together. And more to making great hardware game systems and all that. I don't know what it is. I don't know what makes it happen. I don't know what gives you a Nintendo on one side, and then, you know, you can get talented, skilled people together. Jeff Bezos tells you to make a game and they come up with nothing.
Anybody working in any kind of software company should be able to tell you that. You can throw the smartest people in the world into one room and they might come up with nothing.
Yeah.
Because if they have no clear idea what they're doing, if they're not working well together, like if they're not a coherent group or team, nothing's going to happen.
Exactly. So that's that's how you get Stadia, really, I suppose.
The
gaming product that launched with the CEO of the company saying the sentence, "I don't really play games."
That's a great.
Yeah, that's a really great start.
That was a wow. And then we all okay. See you later, then, mate. Bye.
All right, Patrice. I think you are the only person that hasn't done a story yet.
Yeah, and I'm still trying to decide which one. Let's go with Tesla. I had Tesla or Amazon. Like I had Ben's, but I thought you would pick Ben the Amazon story. But let's go with Tesla. So because it's my favorite, my least favorite thing to talk about. There's a crap ton of lawsuits happening right now against Tesla for one reason or another. For I would say good reasons.
I think it's safer to say there are a buttload of lawsuits against Tesla right now for all the reasons.
For all the reasons, exactly. This one was notable. I mean, in one way, you could just say, well, that's kind of obvious. But there was a deposition by what was his role? I think he's the head of the self-driving
autopilot software. Yeah,
something like that. And he basically admitted or said that the video that they released in 2016 and that Elon himself posted on Twitter and said, hey, this is basically ready and the car is driving itself and blah, 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 was, of course, all fake and marketing. In a sense, I think it's depending on how you see it. Like you can cherry pick it and say, well, for these 10 feet here, it was driving itself. And for these 10 feet here, it was driving itself. And for these 10 feet here, it was driving itself, just not in one straight line in one shot, basically.
Oh my God, they went Obi-Wan Kenobi on it. it's self-driving from a certain point of view.
Yeah, exactly. they basically said, well, they had the safety, Elon had said the safety driver didn't have to do anything. That wasn't true. The driver actually had to interact with the car a couple of times, brake and steer and all of that. They did multiple shots. They pre-mapped the route. So it was a pre-mapped route. They had extra 3D mapping and extra stuff put in the software and all of that. So basically it was nothing like the real thing. It wasn't and I think that's the thing that is here more the issue. They pretended it was the real thing and it wasn't. If they had just said, hey, this is what the future will look like, this is we know this is not ready, but this is how it will look like and all of that, I think nobody would, I mean, some people would have had an issue, but nobody really would have had an issue because it's marketing. But they pretended, oh, this is done, this is the real thing. And we're 7 years later almost? And it's still not here. And it's still very far away from being there. Anybody who reviews the beta says, this is so far from being ready. Forget it. And Elon is maintaining, no, this is coming later this year and all of that. Which, I mean, at this point, we all know is just crap.
Mm-hmm. I'm beginning to suspect that Elon Musk is full of shit.
you would think that.
I'm beginning to get that feeling from
you. What was that? A few hints.
Yeah. I mean, you might very well think so, but I couldn't possibly comment.
It's just, I don't know. It's just a hunch. Just a couple of red flags, I feel. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is what Elon is about, outlandish claims and marketing and getting people excited about nothing and paying a lot of money for it and never really delivering. Not even intending to deliver sometimes. This is sad. This is quite interesting. Especially interesting is that the person who led the self-driving software doesn't seem to know a lot about the industry he's in. There were some questions asked and he had no clue. He's like, I don't know what this is.
Hey, he didn't know what ODD is.
Yeah. Yeah, and stuff like that. And he's like, okay, should know that if you're working in that field, if you're interacting with like all the bodies and like the government and all that, you should know what that is. So yeah, there is.
So can you imagine somebody in your business running software for products that you work on that didn't know what the FDA was?
Yeah, no, I couldn't. It's like, okay, you should know, like, it's like, okay, you should know that.
Wait a minute, I think we have a representative Tesla here on the show.
In your background?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, wasn't it George Santos that was writing all of the media copy for self-driving?
Oh, he probably was, yeah. He probably was.
No, he invented self-driving.
That's right.
I think the secret PR mm-hmm. or the secret marketing department is him and Baghdad Bob.
Yeah.
Well, I think you know, the other thing to keep in mind here is it's a good example of the difference between promotion from a private company and a deposition in a court of law.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This information mm-hmm. came out from the guy that was killed in the Tesla, and they're doing depositions, you know. You don't want to lie during one of those things. Absolutely.
Nope. No. Yeah. This is the lawsuit by I think the family of the Apple employee who was killed.
Well, that was mm-hmm. one actually it was right close to me down on 85. Yeah. So right. That was the one that just randomly hit the it was a construction area Highway 101 and it just steered right into it.
I think so, yeah. I think that's the one. As I said, like it's I followed this and there is Waymo, which is a Google company or Alphabet company.
Mm-hmm.
They've honestly done the opposite. I mean, they have actually self-drive cars, but they're very, very limited and they're very open about what they can't do right now. And they've always been that way. I mean, they also do marketing. Like they release videos and say, okay, show, this is what we can do. But they're also very, like, very clear about, okay, here, like, these are the things that we can't do. This is like not working. This is how we even got to this point. They released a lot of footage about like, okay, the early days, like how all of this worked when they were starting, like, what is that now? 20, almost 15 years ago, yeah. Something like that.
Well,
almost 20, almost 20, because they started in the early 2000s. Yeah, almost 20 years ago. Like all of that. And as I said, they are making progress, but then they're never claiming, hey, we can like tomorrow we're going to release this to the entire world and everybody in their car is going to have it and all of that. And it's like, no, this is not how it works. Like we can do it in a small area in Phoenix where there's basically no weather. And we can do it in San Francisco, where there's a little bit more.
Yeah, and Waymo does its beta test with employees, not customers.
Mm-hmm. Not anymore. Yeah, that's true. They did until a couple of years ago in Phoenix, like in Mesa. You could do it in, I think, 2017. I think they started first with like the early rider program, where you could sign up, but it was still a limited beta. But I think since 2019, you can do it. And I think in this year, last year, they released it to like the bigger Phoenix metro area.
Well, you know, I live a block away from a road that if you got on the road and drove for about 5 miles, you'd run into Google headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And so from 20, whatever, 14, 15, mm-hmm. it was a very busy test route for Waymo, those specific Chrysler mm-hmm. Pacifica vans that were converted by Waymo.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just drive around all the time. And it was horrible. It was like, you know, you come to a stop sign, there'd be a Waymo vehicle. And it was like, go ahead, go. It's your turn, go. And it would just sit there. And it's like, oh, my God.
The hours mm-hmm. super, super careful.
Like, super careful.
They're over careful, yeah. Like,
it's like, you know, if you're going to do this, you know, commute time in the valley is probably not a good time to be testing clogging up traffic.
Just well, at least, or it is. Yeah. Or it is. Because...
Yeah, they have to. Obviously, they have to do it. But but at least they had usually two people in the car, mm-hmm. one or two people.
Yeah. But as said, I know both in,
right back.
Both in San Francisco and also in the Maricopa County or in Phoenix. They are now driving without drivers. Well, not all trips, but they're allowed to, and they're doing it. Like, but they might still decide, like, sometimes they're like, there's something we want to test, and they'll just have a driver in there. Like, they're still doing that. They haven't been super successful business wise so far. I think that's more the challenge right now. I heard that Waymo was struggling a little bit on the business side, because to operate those cars was rather expensive because of all the complicated tech that they have.
No surprise there.
No surprise. I mean, that's one of the things that Elon will, like, try to do. Like, he said, "Oh no, we can do away with all the technology. Like, we don't need that."
No, you can't.
Yeah, we found out exactly how well that works.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a difference between engineering and BS. I mean, let's be honest.
Yes.
You get a lot more BS out of Tesla. I mean, at the end of the day, they make a car that's pretty good. I don't happen to like them, but whatever. You know, they're cars, and they've done a lot of good things. There's just so much BS associated with them. It's maddening.
I don't question that they have some really smart people in the company.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
I mean, they single-handedly showed that electric vehicles could be a viable product.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they were not the only
one. I think they did that independently of Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the thing. The last 10 years, Elon has been taking a lot of credit for things that he has had no part in, other than signing a check.
Or very little.
Yeah.
Writing a check, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And, I mean, I think with the last couple years, you know, we have found out that, you know, he has used his family money to get into that position, but he's not the visionary behind those things.
Yeah, I mean, he probably has some skills somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think he would be in the position just because of money. I mean, there's enough people with a lot of money that are doing nothing with it. No, as I said, he must have some skill, and maybe it's marketing.
Okay,
I mean, you can't question that he's been
that. Bullshitting people. I think his skill is being able to drive up hype. So yes, marketing.
Well, it's more than marketing. I think he's an evangelist, right? He's the who is that guy at Apple? Guy Kawasaki, right?
Yeah,
you know. That's fine. It's okay to have a person like that that sort of paints the vision of where things can go and so on. Mm-hmm. But you have to understand that that's what they are. They're not delivering products. They're evangelists. That's okay.
Yeah, and you don't make them the boss.
Yeah.
And you don't make them the operational boss. Yeah. Guy Kawasaki was not the boss.
No,
Steve Jobs, right?
Yeah. I would say, as a CEO, it is a skill to have.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be the only skill you have.
Right. Well, if you're somebody like Steve Jobs, who's a good CEO, if you have a Tim Cook to be the operational person, that's a perfect marriage. Mm-hmm. When you have Elon that thinks he can do everything, that's a horrible.
Well, he's
way
the
to
only
run a
one
company.
Who can do anything.
He's the only one in his mind. He's the only one that can do anything, including figuring out.
I like to think I'll be close to the Steve Jobs way of doing things when I'm running Apple.
I think you will.
I think you will
be great.
Rich, you need to make sure your resume is up to date on Indeed.com, because I know that's where Apple looks for the CEO.
Yeah. Is that where they go? I will I'll get on there. Right. I was on monster.com instead.
No. It's got to be Indeed. Or maybe it's ZipRecruiter. Check.
I'm going to end up the CEO of Dell at this rate, aren't I? That's where this is going.
Well, they might be the CEO of Twitter.
Wait, Rich, are you going to be CEO of Dell?
Oh, there you go. I'm working already. There you go.
There you go.
The delivery was on time, by the way. Thanks, Rich.
Yeah, so,
Rich, just be careful that you don't end up being the CEO of Twitter.
Right.
They don't last long, though. It might be a fun weekend.
Yep. It would be. True. It would be a blast to be the CEO of Twitter for a week. That would be fun as hell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It wouldn't last long.
No.
I don't know how my liver would handle it, but it would be something to write about. I probably wouldn't destroy my liver in a week. Well, I don't know. I mean, that much time with Elon? Yeah, maybe I would destroy my liver.
Just remember, you have to bring your own toilet paper, even the CEO.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's just not good business. Unlike TSO host, which is great business. TSO hosts, we're so glad that they are here because they are supporting the British Tech Network. They are giving us the resources that we need to be able to live stream shows to you every week and to have a place to host our website and to have a place for all of the show recordings to live so you can watch or listen at your leisure. And without what TSO host is so generously providing us, we would not be here. There's just no way we'd be able to come up with as much as it takes to keep those kinds of resources running. So we really, really appreciate that TSO host is here giving us what they do best, which is web hosting, which is bandwidth. They are also a great place for getting domain names. So if you need any of those, please use them. But what they're really asking of us is that we just go out on social media and give them a shout out and thank them for being here supporting the British Tech Network, which is nothing to do. Just it takes seconds. Go out and give them some online love. If you do need to have some hosting or buy a domain name, use them. And when you do, be sure and use the discount code BTN20. Because you're a BTN fan, you'll get a 20% discount at checkout. So thank you, TSO hosts, for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. And Patrice, thank you for earlier.
I almost won that bet. I almost won that bet.
You almost won that bet. So yeah, thank you, TSO hosts. And now it is, see, it really did throw me because I had to stop and think, what comes next? Cool things. That's what comes next. Cool things. Okay. Who has the first cool thing?
I have a cool thing.
Yes.
But Patrice beat you.
Oh, did you? Sorry.
I beat you.
Okay.
Okay. So my cool thing is something that you've maybe, if you're in the, actually, no, I think even in the mainstream media, you've heard about it. ChatGPT. It's been around for a couple months. I'm only getting now around to it. I was just too busy doing other things. It's a lot of fun, and it's actually surprisingly good. It's not perfect, and it's really funny when you open, like when you go to ChatGPT, there's like some, it says like some limitations. It may occasionally generate incorrect information. It may occasionally produce harmful instructions or biased content. I would say that's probably more than occasionally. And it has limited knowledge of world events after 2021, which is quite funny.
I know a lot.
I guess that's the training data.
To be the ultimate online mansplainer.
Oh, it kind of is, yeah. I wanted to try it for a while and I didn't have time. I was playing a little bit with, like when I had time, I was just playing with Stable Diffusion and so on, but I wanted to try it. So I needed a little bit of copy for my text, for my app. And I was like, I mean, I can just write it. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, it's not super complicated. Like a couple paragraphs, nothing major. I was like, okay, let's see if I ask ChatGPT to write a marketing pitch for a password manager app with this name and these features. And I just like 10, 20 words maybe I used as a prompt. Mm-hmm. And it generated an entire thing. And it you can see it, like it how it like step by step writes. And I tried it like a couple of times to see like does it change if I change the words and so on. It's surprisingly good. I actually used it. I was like, I mean, I took it. There were some, like, there were one or two things that I wanted to change or add. I was like, okay, or like I cut out. There was something about, it said something about like an iOS and Android app, and I took out the Android and stuff because I had told them. Like, it was surprisingly good. And I'm like, okay, I'll use it. Like, why not? Yeah. So this is good.
I've seen some stuff come off ChatGPT from other people and from my own experiments, mm-hmm. where I thought, yeah, this is potentially useful. Other things, I look at it and I'm thinking, oh my God, people are going to assume this is accurate and get in trouble. Yeah. So I decided to ask ChatGPT to do something where I knew very explicitly what the correct responses should be. And I asked it to write a bio for me. Basically, I said, who is Jeff Gamet? And so it wrote me a paragraph long bio. That sounds great and is totally plausible and believable and has so much in it that is wrong. But there's enough that's right, and enough that's close enough to right, and enough that that is, seems totally reasonable that it could be right. That if you were to read it, it's very likely you would read it and think, oh wow, it did a great job at writing a bio for you.
Yeah. For me, I can read like the first like two sentences.
Yeah.
So it's like introducing Aberto, the revolutionary password manager app that keeps all your login credentials safe and secure. Aberto offers the best of both worlds by allowing you to choose between local storage and cloud storage for your passwords.
Perfect. That's pretty good. That's pretty like, darn good. Said,
it actually, I mean, I gave it some clues for sure. As I said, I could have written that myself. Like it's like it wasn't that hard. I gave it some clues what the features are, of course. So, but it was actually quite nice.
I signed up for ChatGPT about 3 weeks ago, and one of the first things I did, I posted in the Slack room, I think. I asked it to write a scary story about BritishTechNetwork.com. And it's kind of pedestrian, right? It was, anyway, it's fun. But that example
but I'm assuming it's along the lines of, one day, you and Rankin became too busy to be able to host the show every day. And so he said, can Jeff Gamet do it? And Jeff said, yes. And then all of this happened.
It said, what did it say? The site began to notice strange and unsettling changes in their behavior. It became obsessive and paranoid, always checking the site for updates.
I'm just asking that question to it. Let's see what it says. Yep. All began with strange messages. Okay.
Yep. All I have to say is this. Well done, Skynet. Well done.
Right.
Yeah. Well done, Skynet.
I'm sorry.
I'm not saying that just because ChatGPT is right behind me.
Right. All right. Who has the next cool thing?
I think I'll go.
Okay.
We'll go from Terminators to actually terminating some stuff. And no, we're not getting back to the first story. Well.
Steam Deck.
Yay.
Have you ever wanted a computer in the palm of your hands? Well, Valve actually sells it. The Steam Deck is technically a gaming console. It runs their own flavor of Linux called SteamOS, and has a lot of it has a little bit of customization of CodeWeaver software to run all your Windows games on it. Well, and starts at $399, but that is just the beginning. Number one, this is a fully functioning Windows compatible PC. So if you don't want to run the Steam OS, you can go put Windows on it.
Or Linux.
Or Linux, or whatever operating system that isn't Mac OS, though someone will probably try, that you want. This is the part that I find really interesting for a handheld gaming PC. They have a partnership with iFixit. So this thing is actually customizable and user upgradable. The base $399 comes with just a 64 gigabyte SSD, but you can update that SSD with any standard size 2230 SSD.
Oh, so you can actually swap that out.
Yeah. I know people who have upgraded the screen. It would not surprise me if Valve in the future were to keep the form factor and just offer an updated motherboard.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the base price is just super affordable. And from what I've heard, why most of these things are complete pieces of that picture I showed earlier. Valve put a lot of thought into the hardware of this thing, a lot of thought into support. So whether it is right now either SteamOS or Windows, because they have a full set of drivers for Windows, they're going to give you a good user experience in something that can grow with you. And well, let's just say you wanted to use it for something else. You can dock this thing. It has a USB 3.2 port, and you can pretty much just turn it into a Windows PC with a keyboard and a mouse and like a little portable display like I have, or a bigger display.
It looks like a dock for it, so you can have all that stuff plugged in. And
yeah,
it looks essentially like a low-end PC wrapped in a game controller form factor, right? You get all the controller and the screen and everything, but underneath it's an AMD chip running Linux, right?
It's more like a low power PC than a low end PC.
Low power,
it's basically, I mean, it's got an RDNA 2 based GPU, which is a lot more important than the CPU on this.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they updated it with more current parts in the near future. But it's capable for what it does. And you can't really find a PC that you can actually fiddle with like this for $400.
So why would you buy a Steam Deck instead of a PlayStation or Xbox? What would be the advantage? I mean, I understand, you know, it's basically a computer, so it's more versatile, I guess.
Well, you can't take the Xbox with you. So it pretty much, it more competes against the
Switch.
The Switch.
Yeah.
And why the Switch you can hook up to your TV. Your Switch isn't, you're not going to be able to run Windows in a productivity environment.
So it's a pretty good portable gaming system.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of ignored this for about a year, except for a couple episodes of Rocket. Then I started looking into small gaming PCs, since, you know, boot camp is currently gone the way of it no longer exists.
It died.
Yeah. So I thought about, okay, I can spend $1,000 on a gaming PC, or I can start looking into this. And the more I looked into it, the more the Steam Deck started making sense.
Steam Deck is very cool.
Yeah.
And I mean, especially since right next to my MacBook, I do have a 15-inch 4K Ultra HD display, which has an HDMI in. It's got USB-C too, so it would be perfect for using with a Steam Deck.
Nice. All right, now we all need to go buy Steam Decks. Thanks a lot. All right. Now, who has the
here?
Next
we, here we go. Here, I've got one. I have one here. I'm gonna have to switch to. There we go. Can you
speed
see?
Test?
Can you see?
Yeah,
we can.
Let's see,
speed
it.
Test.
Let's see it.
Right. Okay. Here we go. This is new this week. Now the first part of this test is pretty good. I'm really happy with it. This is incredible for what I had before.
What is that ping time? 6 milliseconds?
18 milliseconds.
Oh, 18. Okay. Wow. 530.
530 nice. Down. That's incredible. What's mm-hmm. really gonna make you puke with rage is what's about to happen now.
Oh, 500 wow. up. 500 wow. up.
I would love to have that.
530 oh. up.
We'll holy be right there.
Macro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this we're all gonna move in.
Beautiful.
Yeah. This is synchronous internet. And
wow.
Oh my nice. God.
Symmetrical up and down. That's beautiful. As that's a beautiful be. Screenshot.
Mm.
I keep looking at it. It's just so beautiful.
It's 530 up and down. Man,
that reminds me of that time I was working for my university's IT department, and I was basically sitting in the room next to where the fiber came in. And I had nice. A gigabit. I had a gigabit symmetric at my desk. That was nice.
It's just been incredible. So instead of taking about 10 minutes to upload a YouTube video, mm-hmm. it now takes 28 seconds.
Wow.
That's nice.
I'm very happy with it. And it's the deal I got, my current package that I had was sort of 220 megabit down and 20 up. That was I'm currently paying $28.99 a month for that. Next month, that's that introductory welcome right. to being a new customer thing. Next month that ends, and it goes up to $58.99 a month.
Oh,
just don't the same
service. That,
so
that
it was,
is,
oh, it was a case of, well, what can I beat that? And then this package is $39.99 a month.
Oh my God.
For 530 megabit up and down.
40 that pounds nice. for okay, we're all jealous.
Tom is like, I pay that in 3 days.
Right.
days.
There is a gigabit package that they do that I didn't go for. But even that is, I'm actually just looking.
I mean, if it's less than $100, it's a good deal. Or 100 pounds.
Yeah.
Okay, this is going to upset you then. So it's called the Betternet 1000. It's the introductory price for the first 9 months is £26.50 a month.
Oh.
And then it goes up to £49 a month after that.
Oh my God, 50 that's... pounds for gigabit.
Wow. I'll take that.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, Rich, we're all moving into your house.
Yeah.
Now this ISP,
I'll bring the cake.
This ISP exists for about 2 miles around my house. It's, I am, I just happen to live where they're setting up.
Wow.
And so, yeah, there's like 4 or 5 streets. I expected it to take ages to get sorted, but I set it up on the website sort of 10:30 Tuesday night, got a call 9 a.m. Wednesday morning. We're coming tomorrow. Are you in?
Fine. Sure.
Okay. And that was it. Done.
So yeah. Not only are their data speeds fast, their service sounds pretty fast.
Yeah, they were just, they couldn't have come any quicker.
It's just beautiful.
That's
so
awesome.
I'm very happy with them. That's
Wow. Fantastic.
Wow.
I think they're also available a bit in central Manchester if you live there. But I recommend them. And so I'll be coming to you in 16K next week.
But we won't be able to see it because our connections are not that fast.
I'm also thinking of setting up Netflix or an equivalent, just running from my home computer.
Oh, you can totally do that.
Because
yeah,
you don't have to
upload JPEGs anymore. You can upload RAWs, right?
That's it. Mm. That's it indeed. Mm. So
that,
I'm very happy.
That is just
there.
Beautiful. All right, Tom, top that.
Okay. Well, I got a couple of deliveries while we're talking, but I haven't tried them out, so I'll save those for later. My pick for this week is from a company called thedecoywallet.com.
Mm-hmm.
My brother and I are taking a trip, and we're going to South Africa, Cape Town and Durban and all the surrounding areas. And people say, well, you know, crime is bad, but it's not, you know, it's probably no worse than any other big metropolitan area. And, you know, we're old and we'll look like tourists, I'm sure. So the one bit of advice I got was get a decoy wallet, put some cash in there, put some phony cards and stuff. And when you get robbed, give them the decoy wallet. And, you know, they might take your camera, but at least you'll be alive and you'll have your passport and credit cards. So I went to the web. I didn't have any extra credit cards laying around for my Decoy wallet. I went to the web and I typed in Decoy wallet, or yeah, Decoy credit cards. And I got a bunch of really sketchy websites. I think they were trying to sell real fake credit cards. Said, that's not exactly what I'm after. And I found this place called Decoy Wallet. The whole business, they only sell two products. They sell you a combo of a new wallet, a cheap new wallet with some cards. And the cards are like just random names and numbers on a couple of credit cards, a library card, and I think a gym membership card. So it looks somewhat real. Or you can just buy the card separately. So I bought the card separately. And I haven't actually gotten the cards today. They were supposed to come today too. So I'm going to create a, I have an old wallet. I'm going to put these cards in, put some cash. They also said, you know, put a couple old photos in there just to make it look realistic. And it's probably a stupid thing to do, but the fact that I found this Decoy wallet, I think is great. What a great business idea. You know, very focused. All they sell, if you go to their page, they have two products. And when I ordered the product, I sent the email to the contact list, and I said, this is a great product idea. It's just what I need, you know, but I'm leaving on January 31st. Will it get to me on time? The guy said, yeah, well, I'll box it up and put it in the mail for you today. So I should give a shout out to the guy's name is Justin Martin. He's probably the guy that runs the company. So shout out, Justin. Thank you very much. Anyway, I love companies that have very focused products. They have one thing, they do it well, nothing else.
That's just awesome. I love it. I'd never thought of Decoy wallets before, but that,
I didn't know they were a thing. I found it on a Reddit post. It was, wow, what a good idea. It's an easy thing to do. Why not?
Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome. Oh, I guess it means I'm left. All right. So my cool thing is, to me, it's really cool. To everyone else, it'll probably be one of those really sort of things. And it's this. So this is a ruler that I got a while ago. I think it was off Kickstarter. And so it's a, which size did I get? I got the 15 centimeter version. So it has centimeters and inches. Flip it over and it shows you, what is it? Fractional. Yeah, fractions to decimals. It has angles on it. This little piece right here, which does come off, it moves around. So you have a hole here and a hole here, turns it into a protractor. And
wow,
the ends come off. Okay. Oh, it also has a little magnet attachment for a level. So it becomes a level. So anyhow, you pull all the pieces apart and then put them back together magnetically.
You get a T-square.
And now I have a T-square. And I'm trying to do this without actually being able to get that little piece out of the way, without being able to see very well because, you know, glasses. Anyhow, when you put the pieces back together with the magnets, then you have a T-square. And holy crap.
Wow. It does everything.
It does everything. It works really well.
T-square, protractor.
Does it cook coffee?
There we go. I had to take my glasses off. So anyhow, I turned it into a T-square.
Wow.
Nice.
Oh, I like that.
And they come in different colors, so you can get whatever color you want, as long as it's one that they actually offer.
As long as it's black, no.
Yeah, it's like well, I got blue, but it's also no silver or black. No, I don't think there's pink. No. And 10 centimeter or 15 centimeter sizes. Oh, yeah. If you need it to be longer, there we go. No, it's a longer ruler.
Wow. Somebody put some thought into that for sure.
Yeah. Yes. And the markings are all laser etched. So you don't have to worry about
rubbing off.
About anything rubbing off.
Does it feel high quality? Is it robust?
It is. It's cool. It's aluminum, and it feels really solid. It, hold on, I'll pull up. I have the little level right here too.
I don't know if I'd ever use it, but it's such a cool thing. I'm sure I would use it, but it's just such a cool thing.
Right, there we go. So now it's a level.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I need that. Nice.
I got it because I thought, well, that's really cool. And I occasionally need to have quick access to a ruler, and didn't want it to be big. And this was perfect. And I got it. And turns out, holy crap, this thing is great. And they're not that expensive. Like the size that I have, it's like $29 or something.
Yeah.
And So these are really great. And the company, they're pretty good. They're really good about communication, and you know, they get the stuff out to you, and there you go. The ends, when you those round pieces, yes, you can pull those off and put them back together, and now you have different angle measurements on both sides. So it's like everything that you could possibly want on something like this. It's just all there in one little package.
Doesn't have a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah. No,
because would want that.
Okay, so you see it does the edges at angles. Mm-hmm. So you have a spot where a pen tip can fit without you having to do funky angles. I mean, this is solid enough, and that's just thin enough that if you hit someone with it hard enough.
But I want to open a wine bottle.
It's a measuring version of a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah. But Patrice, you can measure how deep the cork is in the bottle.
Oh, okay.
And what angle to put it back in.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, they're from Eugene, Oregon.
That's nice.
Out this direction.
They do some other products as well, which I have no idea what they are, because I only found out about them through this, which I think it was a Kickstarter.
Like it was a Kickstarter. Yeah, that's very cool. All right, you cost me $20.
You're gonna love it. It's a great little thing.
My only want with this thing is if they had a 30cm/1-foot version.
Well, when you pop it apart and stick the ends together,
you get that, right?
Buy two and you have it.
You pop it. You pop the two ends together, and you have a 20cm. No, you have a 30cm ruler for the one that I have.
Oh, okay,
sold.
I will be. Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So now,
all right, I'm going to put that in my decoy wallet, Jeff.
Excellent, Ben. If you're using it as a 30cm ruler. What you want to do is start the measurement at the inches end. Mm-hmm. So that all you have to do is add for whatever the measurement is you're seeing on the centimeter side.
Mm-hmm.
Because the two pieces are the same length, and measurements start at the edge of the ruler, not at a mark inside.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I just love this little thing. And when I got it, I knew it's something I'd use occasionally. But I was also feeling like maybe this is kind of stupid to get. But it turns out I use this thing a lot. So there you go. My re-ruler from Ant Design.
Eugene, Oregon.
And for those of you that live in Oregon, hey, it's a local product. All right. Well, we made it through another show, and this has been absolutely awesome and so much fun. And I'm glad that we have all found ways to cost each other money. This is awesome. So, Tom, where can people find you?
You can find me in the BTN Slack and on Mastodon. I'm Tom F. at sfba.social.
Awesome. And Rich, where can people find you?
You can find me on YouTube and TikTok at Early Morning Barking. I put the TikTok in there now. It's a thing.
It's a thing. Yeah, I get it.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. Yeah. Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, every week here on the Big Show, also on the Mac Show on Fridays, if you're into that non-Apple tech, into that Apple tech, because non-Apple is this show.
Right.
Mixed it up. Other than that, everything I'm doing, literally everything I'm doing, all the social media links, I think there's still a Twitter on there. I should probably just delete that. At least delete it from the website. But my Mastodon and like Instagram and all of it, all of that you can find on thepatrice.com. And if you want to listen to really cool people talk about food and food related stories and memories, head over to foodieflashback.com.
Awesome. And yeah, if you're not listening to Foodie Flashback, well, go do it. It's a lot of fun. Yep. Ben, where can people find you?
You can find me at raythinktech.blogspot.com. There's a couple of brand new articles this week. Cool. You can also find me at Ben Raythig on all the social medias.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, you can find me on all the social medias as Jay Gamut. Fair warning, once the API for Twitter third-party clients was killed, I haven't been on because I don't want to use Twitter's native stuff and their website interface sucks. So I haven't been back, but I mean, my account is still there, but if you're posting anything to me on Twitter, I'm just not going to see it right now. Mm-hmm. But Mastodon, sure. There you go. Jay Gamut there and Instagram and YouTube. Let's see, where else? So on most Tuesdays, Mac Voices Live. Then here on the Big Show on Thursdays. Then most Thursday evenings on In Touch with iOS. Fridays on the Mac Show. And then also on the Context Machine with Brian Chaffin. And I think that's enough. You can Google me. I'm easy to find. Hey, this has been wonderful. Thank you to all of you for being so awesome and just making my Thursday absolutely fantastic. Everyone that's here watching, listening live, thank you for being part of this as well. For everyone that's been in the chat room, hey, thanks for participating there. If you're watching or listening later, thank you for being part of the BTN family as well. A shout out to TSO hosts. Thank you for being here to support us. Thanks to Mueller for making sure we have shows scheduled and people for those shows. And hey, Ewan, you're awesome. We miss you. All right. So don't forget to join us next Thursday for the Big Show again, and join us tomorrow on Friday on the Mac Show. We definitely have a lot to talk about there. Everyone have an awesome weekend. We'll see you next week.